Welcome back. It's a holiday weekend, and it's a correspondence edition of Off the Record with Kathy Gray, Emily Lawler, Zoe Clark, and Bill Ballinger. Our lead story, No Fault Car Insurance. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
All right, so a little bit of history unfolding as we speak. Right now, down at the Capitol, well, we're in Studio C, the Republicans and the D's in the House are meeting on a deal that has been reached on no fault. We all said this was going to happen, didn't we?
I did.
Yeah. No, we didn't.
No, yes, of course. It's just it's been decades in the making, not necessarily with these principles. But no, I mean, every session it's sort of seen this movie before. And so if indeed there is a vote and if indeed it passes both chambers and if indeed this governor signs it, it is pretty historic legislation.
There's enough if indeeds to ruin this program. Okay?
Exactly. Which is why, you know, if you're a money betting person, you know, decide what you want to do now.
So but. What broke the logjam here?
Well, we're not sure yet. We haven't seen the details.
Yeah.
The governor didn't like a couple of things in it. One was that it would have allowed people to totally opt out of personal injury protection coverage. She didn't like that part of it.
The floor is at $50,000, I was told last night.
And there is also of how the fee schedule for medical services. And we're not sure what deal that they reached on that. It had been using the workers' comp fee schedule. We'll see.
That has been changed because the hospitals are not happy. Okay, so Emily, what do you got?
I think the logjam is potentially due to the legislature just operating well on deadline, much like journalists. but, you know.
Not in this room.
But they have this kind of ballot proposal looming over them. I think that kind of lit a fire under a couple people that are pretty key to this operation. And they also have, you know, Mackinac Conference coming up. They want to get out of town. I am shocked that they're working on a Friday. That does not normally happen in the Michigan legislature. But I think they've got some good incentive to pop this out while they can.
And that's why I think we're all sort of, if we get betting people, close to the idea that something is going to happen because of this Friday morning session, right? That says there are likely the votes there to keep members, particularly on a long weekend. We already have emails from members who had to cancel things this morning. You know, in district coffee hours and things like that to stay in Lansing to take this vote.
Why not put this proposal out today and come back on Tuesday and vote on it and give everybody a chance to look at this before over the
terrible
weekend?
Terrible idea.
Bad government.
Why would
we want to read what we're going to do?
Never get elected, Tim. Listen.
What's wrong with that?
They would flee like cats and dogs over the weekend, and the lobbyists would zoom in and change minds. It would be a disaster. If you've got the votes, you run the bill. Right now. You don't wait and, you know, give opponents time to chip away at your support.
There's always going to be somebody who's not happy with this proposal, whether it be the hospitals, whether it be the insurance companies.
The trial lawyers.
So if you leave this without voting on it, it's just going to fester. And it's going to change, and the votes are not going to be there.
Why did the governor say in her written statement, "I agree with this in concept"? Why
well,
did somebody put...
It isn't finally on her desk. She's leaving herself a little wiggle room. But I think we can be pretty sure it's happened.
You also have Mike Duggan, the mayor of Detroit, who has been a big proponent of change, coming out and putting a statement out calling it excellent.
Excellent bipartisan agreement.
Yeah, and I do think, again, we're talking about these sort of nitty-gritty details, but let's take a step back, and this is big. Right. I mean, the fact that I mean, months ago, whether we were talking about there was going to be a deal or not, we still don't have road funding. That is an issue. There's sort of this whole idea of maps and the gerrymandering in the background of all these negotiations and the school budget fund. But This is big. I mean, this is, I don't know if I would say this is grand bargain big, a la Detroit and giving money so that the city wasn't in bankruptcy. But this is, if we see the votes from Democrats and Republicans coming on board to majority Republican-controlled chambers with a Democrat signing it, that is a big deal when it comes to legislative matters in Michigan.
It is big, and, you know, I think it's easy for the press corps to be very cynical about prospects that this would get done, because for years and decades, nothing got done. But I always felt that there was something, and we talked about it around this table, at the beginning of this year, there was a different atmosphere. I think there were enough key players committed to make this happen.
Two new Republican leaders that were not the two old Republican leaders.
Right.
Was part of
and
the
that
equation.
Really helped.
And a new governor who knows how to make a deal and likes to horse trade.
Yeah.
Now, what does she get out of this?
Well, that's the thing.
Thank
that's
you.
What we have to look
exactly.
for.
Exactly. Because the argument was this was her leverage. Holding back on no fault would bring the boys and girls to the table on roads.
Absolutely.
That's what we were saying, but I don't think it was leverage.
Well, you don't.
No.
Well, it's not anymore.
No,
I think it absolutely was leverage, because it was the key, the number one priority for both Shirky, Senate Majority Leader Shirky, and Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield. So they want to get this done.
Yes.
And in order to get this done, they have to have Whitmer on board. And
right.
in order to have Whitmer on board, she's got to get something too. Now, it's not going to be 47 cents gas tax right. increase, but it's going to be something.
And she also, I think, again, as you know, chief executive can take a victory lap. I mean, of course, both Shirky and Chatfield will as well in Mackinac, but she can go into the Mackinac Policy Conference starting Tuesday with a, you know, if she has signed it by then, or with the idea that she will, with a large, bipartisan piece of legislation that has been passed.
The bottom line is, though, that this didn't start out on her campaign
not.
Platform.
Right.
This didn't
right.
start out, if
it
you
was
remember.
Premature. It's premature. What are we talking about?
Was,
no fault for
it. It was one line in the State of the State
yes.
that seemed like, you know, of course, that she got a standing ovation from Republicans.
Yeah.
Recalling correctly, but she has agreed to put this on her agenda. Yeah. What are they agreeing to put on theirs?
But I think that's what I'm saying also is there's that, but then co-opt it. Like, right? Like, now co-opt it as I'm the Absolutely. Governor that signed this, and that's smart strategy if you can make it suddenly seem like, well, I brought leaders to the table. Now, we all know that's not necessarily how it worked, but as a governor, she could come out and say, look what happened within the first 6 months of me become governor under my watch. And that's what voters, you know,
I want to see how many D's vote for this thing.
Sure.
That is a question mark.
That's
a lot
an outstanding
of them
question.
Because the governor supported it.
But a lot of them.
Don't want to. And they got really thrown under the bus by the governor.
It seemed like as the governor was coming around on this and sort of drawing a line, you know, the Democrats were going in a different direction. They held their own press conference, their own legislation with a different idea. So, you know, I'm not sure what changes have been made to get them on board.
I don't want to rain on the parade too much.
Okay.
But
it's going to rain holiday weekend.
Referendum,
it's Memorial Day. Yeah.
Referendum, CPAN has said we may mount a petition drive, not Dan Gilbert's, low threshold, 5% of signatures equal to the vote for governor in the last
Anything
election.
Is possible.
Easier than initiative. And guess what? It freezes the law until people vote on it in November 2020.
This is supposed to take effect in July.
Would they want to do this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Would they want to do this? And could the legislature and the governor end run them by passing another bill? It's almost the same. Kind of like they did with emergency manager after that was defeated at the polls in 2012. That could happen.
Here was the popular wisdom. Democrats were on record voting against money back on the first vote. Okay, so now they could redeem themselves by supporting this. But I've talked to one Democrat who said, you know what? We can actually vote no on this and make this a health care issue, which resonates with the people at home, which is the insurance companies are taking away the nasty insurance companies are taking away your benefits, and we could frame this thing and survive this politically. I'm not sure that plays, but at least that's what they are thinking.
Well, when your auto insurance costs come down, there's a possibility, a very good possibility, that your health insurance costs are going to go up.
Yes.
So that's certainly something that they're going to be putting out there.
Anything else on this?
Well, more difficult for some Democrats than others. Don't forget that Detroit is heavily affected by this issue. We saw some Detroit area senators get in on board with the original plan. I think that Detroit Democrats have a lot more incentive to come over on this.
And if you're in a swing district, I think you've got to be a yes. You've got to be a green light on this. The savings between $120 and $1,200, wasn't that the original numbers we were throwing around? We don't know if that's the bottom line. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We need a statement from Dan Gilbert. Maybe we'll have one by the time people see this. He's the only one we haven't heard from.
You know what he'll say? Mission accomplished.
I think he probably will, but now there's the other possibility of a petition drive going in the other direction.
Well, and he'll say, I just saved $1 million. Because he was going to have to pay $1 million to get the signatures to get this thing before the legislature again.
Yeah. So. Well, this will be a fun day. All right. We have new polling data. New polling data on Mr. Trump. Before I told you what the number was, how many people in Michigan don't want to impeach the president? Do you know what the number is?
More than half do not want to impeach.
More than half. What do you think?
I think a 50-50.
Okay.
I guess I'll go with those answers.
Wrong.
No, I don't know. Well, you did tell us, so I'm having trouble.
See, that
I'm
was
having
a,
trouble
you're,
unknowing.
You know what? Your short-term memory, guys, is a problem here. All right, let's take a look at the setup piece. The number is 55% don't want to impeach. Take a look.
While Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her troops in Washington discuss impeachment, with the conversation getting louder, back here in Michigan, the Vanguard Public Affairs Dental Research Survey shows 55% of Michigan residents do not favor impeaching the president. This local Republican says he's not surprised.
Michigan residents realize that there's no impeachable offense the president committed.
How do you reconcile that attitude in Michigan and the fever down in Washington to impeach this guy?
Well, I think in Michigan we're rational actors, and in Washington they're not.
In Michigan, 85% of the Republicans are standing by their man. But this Macomb County Democrat contends over time that 55% will erode.
I think that in time, and it's already eroding away, so I think in time that he'll always have his core base, but that struggle for people to use that impeachment word will be less of a problem for them.
Candidate Donald Trump told the African-American voter he or she had nothing to lose by voting for him. But in this poll, 60% of the black voters want to impeach Mr. Trump.
Yeah, I'm surprised about the 55%.
In the black community, it's 60% get rid of them.
Obviously.
Why do you say obviously?
Well, I don't think any of his policies have benefited urban areas.
Former Democratic Vice President Joe Biden gets 37% of the Michigan vote. The man who won the Michigan Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders, is at 16%. And the survey also suggests Mr. Trump would lose by 10 points to any of the Democrats who might run against him. But this outstate Republican reports Mr. Trump is stronger in his area than ever before.
I will tell you what I feel in the districts that I'm in, that he's stronger. Now, I do know that there's some issues in a few of them. He will be reelected.
Do you think Mr. Trump should be impeached?
God, I am not exhausting any of my energy on that subject. I got too much else to do right here in Michigan.
In fact, that would be a mistake for Democrats, wouldn't it?
Oh, you are exhausting, Tim. I got to conserve my energy for important things.
The survey had a margin of error of 4 points.
Oh, yeah. So, why doesn't she want to weed into this thing?
Why should she? She gave you
shades
the perfect
of who?
Answer.
Shades of who? Rick Snyder.
Well,
she's channeling Rick Snyder.
In that situation is not going to want to answer your questions on that subject. She has bigger fish to fry. She gave you the right answer. You got stiffed.
So what else is new? Z?
I have to agree with Bill on this. There's no reason for her to wade into this. She is not trying, at least over the next little while, to become a big firebrand national figure. She is not, unlike 100 million other people right now, running for president against Donald Trump. There is no reason for her to wade into this. Stay in your Michigan lane, and that is exactly what she was doing and trying to swat you away.
Yeah, 55%. I thought the number might be higher not to impeach.
I think that's kind of playing out right now. I think obviously Republicans and Trump supporters obviously are not going to want to impeach him. But, you know, the Democratic Party, even right now, I think in Washington, is having a little bit of a debate over whether this distracts from 2020, mm-hmm. whether they should be focusing forward, or whether they should be moving for impeachment. So I guess it doesn't strike me as super surprising that some Democrats might also not want to impeach at this moment.
The big story in that poll was people in Michigan do not want to impeach President Trump, but they don't want to reelect him either.
Okay. Two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they'd like to see Congress get something done, you know, other than just, you know, continuing to relitigate the Mueller investigation. And they'd like to see them act on infrastructure, act on some other things. And if they start talking about impeachment, it's going to suck all the oxygen out of the room.
And let's remember why some of that is. I mean, Nancy Pelosi remembers the late 90s when Republicans still have battle scars from when they did this to Bill Clinton. And where did his poll numbers go? Through the roof. And so I think there is a concern that if they push for impeachment too soon, or without the country sort of behind them, pushing them to go, that they could see exactly what happened to Republicans 20-some years ago. But interestingly enough, so much attention now is being paid to Michigan's own Justin Amash, because he is one of the first Republican lawmakers to step out and say, actually, I've read the report, and here's actually what I think. And he's from fellow Republicans, getting a lot of grief for it. Some Democrats are, you know, amen, rock on, keep going. But I mean, what you're seeing is not enough of that middle ground ready to push for it. And that's an issue. And Democrats are very aware of that.
I don't think Michigan lawmakers are going to go back home on this holiday weekend and have the people saying, what about that impeachment of the president? Why aren't you guys doing it? No, remember, I'm not in Congress. It's not a front burner issue for Joe Sixpack and Josephine, is it?
I don't think so. And I think that, you know, it does have the potential to distract, especially if Republicans want to go home this weekend and talk about, I don't know, historic auto insurance reform.
Yeah.
Well, I was at an event with U.S. Rep. Haley Stevens a few weeks ago, and it was shortly after the Mueller report came out. And it was a lot of back and forth, a lot of questions and answers, and not one question about Trump or the Mueller report came up. It was all about, you know, trade, things like that. It was
pocketbook stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The Democrat, this is like their opium, though. It's sitting out there, and some of them just can't resist.
Well, I think there are some very, very strong voices on the very progressive end of the Democrats, and
which is not the mainstream of the Democratic Party.
Right. I mean, look, and we see that in the Republican Party, that there's, you know, conservatives that are very far to the right who don't, you know, represent the mainstream or establishment Republicans. But I think because the I word is sexy and does make headlines, that the folks that are calling for it the loudest, that's where the attention goes. You know, we'd like to say that, you know, we are covering when there is fighting and bickering. And so when you have loud voices and calling for impeachment, that is what we're covering, right? We're not covering the 400 people that aren't
calling for it. Mr. Trump is playing this like a violin. He is.
Well, he may be playing it, but I think he's unhappy about the whole evolving saga that never goes over. So I don't think it's like he enjoys this. Look, I'll just mention this. We are much nearer the end of his first term, or maybe his only term, than we are the beginning. I mean, we were having the same debate 2 years ago that we're having right now. So it makes you wonder why, if, in fact, polls show that he's going to be beaten next year, do the Democrats care that much? They're going to beat him anyway. Well, I think the idea is maybe we can get him out of office and get somebody else in there that we can beat a lot easier, because I think they're nervous about Trump. Look, they thought they had him dead to rights in 2016. He was no chance to win, and he won. And you heard Senator VanderWaal, you know, very confident. A lot of Republicans are confident, say, hey, despite all this, Trump is going to be reelected. I think the Democrats are worried. They say, let's get him out of there, even if he's near the end of his term. So what? Get him off the stage, put Mike Pence or somebody else in there that we can beat.
I do think, though, that Democrats, I think, believed that they won in 2018, surely because Trump was in the background of everything. But we've talked many times around this table that Democrats here in Michigan were not campaigning against Trump, even if he was in the background, but they were campaigning for education, for economic issues, right? We've all had those conversations with the leaders who are saying, yeah, we specifically told our members not to talk about Donald Trump, right? And so I think that's going to be the question for whoever ends up running against Trump in 2020 is, does this become a referendum on Trump? Or do you stick to issues that, again, going back to what Kathy is saying, that folks actually want answers for, not the inside D.C. gossip baseball?
I'm not sure that this poll is accurate when it said anybody who runs against Trump beats him by 10 points.
Generic. Yeah.
Generic is, you know, what do you stand for? I think it's a little deeper than that, but I think Joe Biden.
Suddenly Hillary Clinton saw that poll and was like, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, she would be anybody, wouldn't she? But Biden being ahead in Michigan is not a surprise, is it? Not.
No.
This guy has a history here, that sort of stuff. All right, look, you bring up Justin Amash for people that missed the story.
Sure.
He and Mr. Trump are having a Twitter war. Why? Over what?
He said, I'm the only member
I read
of Congress
the report.
Who's actually read the report, and I think there are impeachable offenses committed by the president in here. And I think actually it's been a little bit overblown by the news media and people who are looking desperately for some Republican who will get on board with the idea of impeaching
Donald
Trump.
Other people are now going to fall in line. I think that's a false storyline. Okay,
well,
I think the line has ended.
I think this is low-hanging fruit for Justin Amash to be the only person that you can pick off from the Republicans who says, I'm willing to look at impeaching the president. I don't think there's probably going to be anybody more.
Two things about Mr. Amash. He's mercurial. And secondly, he's thinking about running for president as an independent. Put that in the context. What did you make of this story?
Well, he earned himself a primary challenger through it. State Representative James Lauer is going to mount a challenge. I wouldn't be surprised if more people get in. He made himself a little bit vulnerable in an area of the state that I don't know how they're feeling on Trump these days.
Well, he's been vulnerable for a bit. He's been going after Trump for, almost the whole 2 years that Trump has been in office. So there's, the conservative base over in West Michigan is becoming disillusioned with Justin Amash. But he's ambitious, and
he's being him.
He's totally being him.
Yeah.
And whether it's as an independent or as a libertarian. I think that we're going to see him on the ballot somewhere else in 2020 than the third congressional district.
That's a very interesting point. And then the other kind of issue, right, is that he's had backing of DeVos money for a very long time. Being the operative word that this week a family spokesperson came out and said, they have not given him money this election cycle and that they have no plans to, although also then later they said, but it has nothing to do with these recent statements.
Okay, good. Duly noted.
This has to do with Betsy DeVos working for Donald Trump. Yep. And Donald Trump calling Justin Amash a loser and a lightweight. Mm-hmm. So that's what that's about.
All right. Dana Nessel says you cannot collect petitions and put a limit of 15% from each area. Who cares?
It's kind of interesting. Dan Gilbert actually said one of the reasons he wanted to launch his petition drive now was because of this new law that made it tough to collect petitions.
It would take it longer to get it right.
But to the rescue rode Dana Nessel saying it's not really that tough anymore. I'm going to declare several provisions unconstitutional. So now this is all in a wash. But look,
she said she was going to do this before she did it.
Yeah, but she's now going to be backed up by lawsuits that are challenging the whole law.
So, what was the intent originally for Mr. Lauer and friends to put this 15% limit from an area so that all the people in Detroit wouldn't put a thing on the ballot?
Representative Lauer is from a more rural area, represents a more rural district, and had said that, he wants these petitions to come through areas like his and have buy-in from people across the state and not just necessarily our urban centers.
This was controversial late last year when it passed, and many people urged Governor Snyder to veto it and thought he would, but he didn't. He signed it.
It was part of many different pieces of legislation that was controversial during lame duck that the governor did end up signing. And, what Dana Nessel came out and said is, look, when you are basically saying that there is a certain threshold that you can't go above, right? Not that you have to meet, but you simply can't go above it, that there is an issue then about your free speech rights as a signer of a ballot. And that's really what the unconstitutional aspect of the law she came down on.
What's the latest on Larry Inman?
Well, he's been kicked out of the Republican caucus, which doesn't mean a whole lot. It just means that he can't meet with them behind closed doors like they do multiple times every session day. He doesn't have the access to legislative services. He doesn't have the access to bill staff people. So he's on the outs, but he's been out of town all week. We haven't seen him. The calls for him to resign are increasing. He hasn't resigned yet, but a story came out yesterday that the FBI raided his house back in August. And that was 5 months before his reelection bid. And he came really close to losing that. It was 349 votes difference. So that was a really close election.
Interesting thing this week, the voters, not politicians, got into this. I thought they were a redistricting group. So did any of you catch? I mean,
yeah, they put out a statement. Yeah.
They're freelancing now. Now they go up to Traverse City with the mayor and say, Larry, what does that
mean?
Well,
they're expanding their influence.
Scope of influence.
Their scope of influence. Yeah. They're saying, we're on a roll here. Let's push it. Good government covers a lot of different areas, not just an independent redistricting commission. Let's look at integrity. Let's look at financial disclosure.
Well, that's a new
transparency.
New,
yes. Yeah.
That's
part
a new thing. The feds did file some court documents that they took his phone, they did raid his house, and had what they think is evidence against this guy.
And there's a recorded phone call.
Yeah, between him and the Carpenter Union official. And, you know, that could prove to be as incriminating as the text messages
Yet
are.
Another text message scandal in Michigan. We have to start the sign again of how many days we've gone.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep in mind, everybody is focused on, we never had this conversation. Mm-hmm. Everybody assumes that's a damning thing. But there's another interpretation of that. It could have been, look, I know I'm in trouble, and I don't want the word to get out that I think I'm in trouble and I'm panicked. Is that another interpretation?
Well, I mean, he has insisted all along that his remarks were taken out of context and due process, as we discussed last week, should have its day.
But he hasn't provided that context, which I expect to happen in court.
All right, let's go get our sandwiches and go down to the legislature. All right? Everybody have a nice holiday weekend. See you next week right here on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit wkar.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.